Equifax, one of three major consumer credit reporting agencies, saying Thursday it's been hacked, potentially leaving 143 million U.S. consumers' social security numbers and license numbers vulnerable. Equifax says it discovered the data breach on July 29th and hired a cybersecurity firm to investigate. Hackers had access to the company's system from mid-May to July. Equifax says over 200,000 credit card numbers were also accessed, and personal information of some UK and Canadian residents were hacked as well.
While the production of shale oil has grown rapidly in the U.S., leading to more high-paying jobs in energy industry hubs like West Texas, another darker kind of boom has emerged: drug use among oil field workers. According to a Reuters analysis, in 2016, workers in oil-rich Midland, Texas, tested positive for cocaine, amphetamines, and marijuana at nearly double the average rate of all U.S. workers in safety-sensitive jobs.
At Apple's highly anticipated product event next week, the company will unveil not only its latest lineup of phones, but its brand new campus. The keynote will take place at the Steve Jobs Theater, one of the buildings at Apple Park. The site is said to have come with a $5 billion budget, seen as the founder's final legacy.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. It is Friday, September 8th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day, the last one of the week, a short week. Seemed like it went a little bit longer than just 4 days for those of you who had the holiday off. But here we are. It's Friday, and we're glad you're here with us. Later in the program, we'll be talking a little bit about the DACA program. Remember earlier this week, we got the end in sight for the Dreamer program, and we'll talk with an economist about how this might impact the economy. Certainly, there's a big emotional toll from it. But we'll talk with a fellow from the Mercatus Center about the economic impact. Paul Nolte's here. He'll join our conversation momentarily. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are pointing toward a lower open on Wall Street. Dow futures are off 68 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. In Asia, markets are mixed. The Nikkei is off 121 points. That's about a half a percent. The Hang Seng is up 145. The Shanghai off just a fraction. In Europe this morning, markets are generally lower. The FTSE's off about a quarter. The DAX just a fraction lower. And in France, the CAC is off about a third. Oil is trading this morning at $48.85 a barrel, which is down just about a half a percent. Some stories that we're watching for, you heard there in the opening montage, the Equifax controversy. In addition to reporting this breach, it's now been learned that credit CEOs, company officials, I should say, from the company, sold some of their stock in the days ahead of the announcement yesterday to the tune of about $1.8 million apiece. The CFO and COO are listed in the story that follows up on this. Apparently, the cyber attack happened between mid-May and July, and affects about 143 million Americans. Again, an Equifax breach of cybersecurity, social security numbers, driver's licenses, and other sensitive information has apparently been shared from that breach. Also this morning, we're watching very closely what's happening on two disaster fronts. First, in Mexico, authorities now say that at least five people have been killed after an 8.1 earthquake that happened late in the night. There was a threat of a tsunami, but apparently a big one didn't materialize. They're still waiting for daylight to see some of the damage there. And also Hurricane Irma, which is a Category 4 storm, now hitting the Bahamas, but it seems to still have Florida in its sights. We'll continue to monitor all of those stories this morning here on The Opening Bell and at 720 WGN. It is Friday, and Paul Nolte's here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He's here every Friday. We talk about the economy and our portfolios. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you.
Good to have you here. Anything on the week hit you as concerning or surprising?
No, it's been more of the same as we've kind of talked about the last couple months or so. It's the lower dollar. It's better foreign markets. I think really the surprise for a lot of investors is how things are going in the interest rate market. Interest rates now are down to 2% or close to 2% on the 10-year bond. Mortgage rates are coming back down again. This is all flying in the face of a Fed that wants to raise rates in the ECB yesterday talking about ending their quantitative easing maybe in October. But again, the bond market, both in Europe as well as in the U.S., calling that bluff and saying, I don't think that's going to be the case.
Still not seeing inflation go up. That was kind of mentioned in the Bay's book, and we've heard some Fed governors this week talk about it. Why can't we get this to move?
You know, it's interesting. For those of us that are older, we remember the days of the 70s and 80s when inflation was a big problem, and now we can't get it going. there's a lot of factors, I think, that are going into it. The discussion is around what they call the Phillips curve, and what that says is when we get employment at very high levels, like we do today, and unemployment very low, that creates a lot of wage pressure and creates inflationary pressures. We're not seeing that today. So you've got a lot of the Fed governors kind of wringing their hands going, well, the textbook says this, but we're not seeing it. And there's a couple reasons, I think, for it. One is there may be a lot more slack in the economy than we think. There's maybe more available workers than what we think. And we're not seeing a lot of wage or we're not seeing a lot of pressure coming through in companies being able to raise prices. So price increases are struggling to come through. The example I would use would be the Amazon takeover of Whole Foods. Immediately after that, what happened? They cut prices on a ton of goods. So prices are actually coming down, not necessarily going up.
The other thing that happened this week, too, that I thought, I don't know if it made a blip on your radar screen. Everybody seemed a little concerned that Stanley Fisher, the vice president at the Fed, was leaving early, announcing his retirement. He said he, for personal reasons, obviously. How big of an impact does the VP, but this guy in particular had a big impact, didn't he, on monetary policy?
He had a big impact, not just here in the United States, but around the world. So he was very much a what we would call maybe the voice of reason on the Fed, certainly more on the central side of things. More importantly, I think right now is certainly with the discussion around what happens with Janet Yellen come February. There are four current openings with this retirement, four openings on the Fed, plus Janet Yellen in February. So the president has the opportunity to put five people on the Fed. So that could be a huge change in Fed policy, Fed thought process, et cetera, depending who gets nominated and ultimately approved.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, an Equifax breach has possibly exposed 143 million people to identity theft. The breach was discovered on the 29th of July. Exposed data includes names, birth dates, social security numbers, and driver's license numbers. Equifax says more than 200,000 credit card numbers were also obtained. The FBI is investigating the breach. The Atlanta-based company is one of three major U.S. credit bureaus. Nearly 400 top American business executives have signed a letter asking President Trump and Congress to save DACA. They include the CEOs of Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Cisco, Microsoft, and Visa. The letter says the deportation of the so-called dreamers would be disastrous for the U.S. economy. And Asian shares mostly slipped today. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 523, and Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, I saw something this week. They're trying to get tax reform or some sort of tax thing done this year, and one of the things that jumped off at me was a proposal that they would no longer allow 401ks to be post-taxed. It would be pre-tax so that you get your money taxed going in. It sounds like a Roth, first of all, Roth IRA, but what do you think about that?
You know, it's going to be interesting, and exactly that. It is going the route of a Roth IRA, and actually when you look at it from a planning perspective, Roth IRA is actually a very good way to go. There is that incentive, and the thought is the taxes, a tax cut on your income is going to be beneficial and a reason for you to save money as opposed to just saving money because you're going to need it in retirement. When you look at the tax implications, though, over the course of a lifetime, you're actually better off in a Roth. It's counterintuitive, but let's say, for example, you are in the 40% tax bracket. You put $10,000 in an IRA. Over the next 40 years, that grows to, say $50,000. In a traditional IRA, that gets taxed as you pull that money out. And let's assume your tax bracket goes down some. The amount of money that you're going to be taxed on that is actually more than what you're getting taxed going in, or the tax savings that you had going in. So because you're able to pull that money out tax-free now, it's not taxed anymore. So from that perspective alone, and I've seen that with a lot of my clients where they have, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in an IRA, when they start pulling that out, they're taxed at the money that's being pulled out. They can avoid that by having that into a Roth account, which has a lot of the same characteristics. It grows tax-free. There's no taxes as it grows. So there is certainly in everybody's mind, I want that tax deduction. That's a good thing. But it's going to depend on a lot of the other moving parts as far as what is my ultimate tax bill going to be. Uh-huh. Do my taxes go up significantly? And that's going to be the concern more, I think, than whether my 401k gets taxed going in.
If you combine that with one of the other things that's on their list, the potential capping of mortgage interest deductions, those two would seem like a pretty sizable hit to middle-class people, right?
Well, it depends on where they cap it. Mm-hmm. So, again, if you look at the deduction for mortgage interest, let's assume that you're buying a $400,000 house and you're capped at $15,000 worth of interest. Well, at current rates, you don't hit that yet. Mm-hmm. So on a typical mortgage for those that are in the $400,000 home or less, which would be middle America, let's assume, as opposed to somebody that's living in a $2 million house, that's some way to get at it. Again, a lot of proposals that we're talking about here are a long way from being law, and they've floated this for a long time, the deductibility of home interest. We're the only country, I believe, that actually gets a tax break for mortgage interest. Other countries, Canada, England, et cetera, do not. And their home ownership rates are very close to what ours are.
As we close out the week here, what do you like in terms of investments from our portfolio?
Oh, we still love the international markets. We're still putting a fair amount of money there. The weakness in the dollar certainly helping out the international markets. We're seeing better growth rates there. We're getting more concerned about the U.S. markets and large cap U.S. The recent market actions are leaving more and more stocks behind. And the bond market, as we mentioned earlier, doing very well. So we still are rebalancing portfolios and moving more toward the fixed income side, a little bit more toward international, away from the U.S. And those parts of the markets actually have done very, very well here. International is up over 20% the year to date. Twice what the S&P is, and bonds are doing very well, especially relative to stocks over the last 3-4 months.
Is a correction, a bigger correction coming for the larger market?
You know, the thing is with a correction, we get a 3% decline and everybody thinks the end of the world is here. The correction would be a 5 to 10%, and we haven't had one of those really in a couple of years. That's not out of the realm of possibility, and that doesn't mean the world is ending. It would be healthy for the market to see something like that, but I think that would really put investors on edge considering that we've had a very quiet, gradual rise in the stock market since early last year.
I would bet that some in the Tin Hat Club would look at 3 hurricanes and a major earthquake all in one day.
Yeah,
to the world.
Yeah, we're moving everything to cash or to the basement cellar.
Right, right. Paul, any big plans for the weekend? What are you going to do?
Oh, this one's going to be a nice quiet weekend in between a wedding next weekend and a Boston trip last weekend. So it's going to be hanging around the Chicago area and enjoying some nice weather.
Well, it's good to see you. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely.
All right, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find more at kingsview.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40 here in our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. We're glad to have you here. Lots of conversation this week about DACA and the order to bring it to a close from Wall Street to Main Street to the halls of some of the biggest companies in the country,
calls and criticisms about the decision by the president to bring this wind docket down for the Dreamers. Thought we'd go into a little bit of this, see what the potential economic costs are with Dan Griswold, who's a senior research fellow and co-director of the program on the American economy and globalization at the Mercatus Center. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be with you.
Well, where should we start? What would be the starting point for this? Giving people a sense of who we're talking about with DACA, 700,000 people. Many of those, misconception is that we're talking about young children, but that's sort of wrong, isn't it? These are working people, aren't they?
Well, correct. They're children. They had to arrive here before June of 2007 and before their 16th birthday. So, Steve, what makes this such a difficult issue is that they were minors when they arrived. They did not break the law. They just came with their parents. And if they came 16 or younger, they're pretty much fully Americanized. In fact, for a lot of them, this is the only country they've known. They're as American as my kids and yours in the sense of identifying with America and being acculturated. And Congress tried to pass a bill that would legalize them in 2010. It passed the House. It failed in the Senate. In 2012, President Obama issued an executive order basically saying they wouldn't deport these kids. If they wanted to join the program, they had to pass a background check, make sure there was no criminal behavior in their background, pay a fee. They had to be in school or working. And if they passed those and could speak English, they were in the program. There's now about 800,000 young people and young adults in the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
What would it look like to take those people out of the economy, out of the U.S. economy?
Steve, it would be a big hit to the U.S. economy. There's 800,000 in the program. Estimates are 90% or more, 700,000 or more of them are in the workforce. They all have a high school degree at least. Two-thirds of them are either of the adults over 25 are either in college or have a college degree. As you mentioned, many of them work for some of our largest U.S. Companies. Apple has said they've got, I believe, a couple hundred DACA workers. They're productive in our economy. They're good for taxpayers. All the evidence shows that if you have a high school or college degree and you come here at a young age, you pay more in taxes than you collect in benefits. In fact, they're not eligible for any government support. They're not even eligible for federal student loans. So these kids are working hard and paying taxes and being contributing members of our economy.
One of the things the Attorney General said this week when he was announcing the rollback of DACA was that some of these people took jobs away from Americans. Is that an accurate statement?
Steve, there's no evidence of that. In fact, it just defies logic. That's the lump of labor fallacy, that there's just a fixed number of jobs and anybody who comes in and takes a job knocks somebody else out of a job. No, there's plenty of opportunity. In fact, you've probably seen it around Chicago. The story is American companies are having a hard time finding qualified workers for particular jobs. And I'm an older baby boomer. We're reaching a demographic tipping point in this country where our working age population is going to start shrinking if we don't have significant immigration, because America's birth rates are not sufficient to keep our population growing into the future. These kids are a sure bet for the United States. We need them in our workforce. I think Congress passing some legalization of the DACA kids is absolutely necessary over the next 6 months.
And it sort of what you've just said there sort of makes me wonder, what is the motivation behind doing this at all, and certainly for doing it now? I mean, it seems like there may be like a nefarious, almost hateful reason for doing it.
Well, let me say something positive about the Trump administration. The President Trump has expressed his sympathy for the DACA kids time and time again. I don't think he wants to deport them. His attorney general was on his most solid ground when he talked about the constitutionality of what President Obama did in 2012. Steve, you asked what's driving this. There were, I think, at least 10 states' attorneys general who said they were going to sue the Obama or the Trump administration if they continued DACA beyond this week. So I think the program very well may have been struck down in the courts. There was a similar program that President Obama tried to implement for the parents of these childhood arrivals, and that got struck down in the courts. So Congress, the buck stops at Congress. Congress is responsible for our immigration laws. We shouldn't have our immigration laws be by presidential edict. Congress, Republicans and Democrats working together, and your Senator Dick Durbin has teamed up with Republicans to sponsor legislation that would legalize the DACA kids. In that sense, President Trump may have done a favor, and that is kicking it back to Congress where it belongs so that we can have a permanent solution and these productive, Americanized young people don't have to live under this shadow of potential deportation.
The Durbin bill that you're talking about, he's teamed up with Leslie Graham, the Republican.
Lindsey Graham, yes.
Lindsey Graham, I'm sorry. And this bill, I mean, it seems that we're hearing a lot of people say positive things about it. Is maybe the second time a charm for this bill?
I think so, especially with the termination of the program. The Trump administration is going to wind it down starting in 6 months. Steve, the key is going to be there has to be goodwill on both sides. I think what would be a poison pill if this gets linked with something like appropriating $1 billion for the wall, which I don't think is a good idea along the Mexican border, or drastic cuts in legal immigration, which is something Attorney General Sessions referenced. I think that would be a bad idea. I think a pretty clean DACA bill along the lines of what Senator Durbin and Senator Graham have talked about would be the way to go. I think there's bipartisan support. House Speaker Ryan, who lives just across the border in my home state of Wisconsin, he said he wants to get something done. I think all the elements are there. The president, I believe, would sign it. At least he's indicated he would. But it just we have to avoid it getting caught up in politics and especially these poison pills of building a wall or cutting legal immigration.
Yeah, I can't imagine being one of the dreamers with all of what they're facing. In some cases, they're dealing with a hurricane, and I think there were, 70,000 of them in the Houston area alone.
Yeah.
It just seems they've got enough on their plate right now.
I fully agree. You're right. The timing is bad in the sense of we've got a lot more important things going on. But again, this deadline about it being sued, I do think ultimately this may be an opportunity for Congress to do the right thing and make the future of these productive young people more secure by passing some kind of legislation.
Dan, good of you to be with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
I've enjoyed it very much. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks. Dan Griswold is a senior research fellow. He's also co-director of the program on the American economy and globalization at the Mercatus Center.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 552 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. It looks like more losses expected when The Opening Bell rings later. Dow futures losing ground this morning, off now 79 points. S&P futures down about 8, NASDAQ futures lower by about 16. Gold and silver a little higher this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. And now here are your directions for the weekend. You get in your car and you drive about 65 miles southwest of Chicago. You'll be in the village of Sandwich, Illinois, with one of the iconic county fairs in the entire country. You stop at Faye's Pork Chop Barbecue and get your barbecued chicken and your barbecued pork chop, and then you go ride the Ferris wheel and just enjoy the county fair.
That sounds like a plan. You were there yesterday, right?
We were there yesterday. And a good crowd, good weather, and really it is the last county fair close into the Chicago area. Picturesque. I call it a Currier and Ives print because the fairgrounds have huge shade trees, and really they've been around for over 125 years. So if you want to go to a county fair, this is really your last chance close into the Chicago area. So you have that right now. You have all my instructions.
And you said that the pork sandwich was the one to get?
Pork chops.
Pork chops, yeah.
Or chicken.
Chicken.
And Faye's Barbecue, I think they've been at the fair for 50 or 60 years every year without fail. And it's sort of become a tradition. We see a lot of people there every year, and it's a kind of a get-together for family and friends and neighbors, and it's a great county fair.
Orion, we've been watching a couple of things with a little concern this week. Obviously, the hurricanes are among them, but the ongoing drought not too far from here, up north and west of us. What would you say is the biggest threat facing agriculture this week?
Biggest threat facing agriculture this week is the hurricane season, because we're looking not only at damage to crops. We talked to a farm broadcaster down at Waco, Texas yesterday, and he sent us pictures of what happened to the cotton crop that probably is about 30 or 40% harvested. The winds and the rain came, tore the cotton bales apart. It actually looks like a snowstorm has hit that part of Texas because of the cotton that has been just ripped apart. So I would say that is a major concern. And then the other concern is the export challenges that we now have physically moving the crop into ports that are really not able to handle it because of hurricane damage. So we've got the cattle and crops in the southeastern United States with Hurricane Irma, and we've got the recovery in Texas of Hurricane Harvey. I'd say that's probably the biggest problem that farmers right now are having. One other note that came out yesterday, Monsanto pushing the state of Arkansas to allow farmers to spray crops with the company's dicamba herbicide. And that's linked to damage on plants across the U.S. farm belt. And Monsanto Thursday asked Arkansas to reject a state task force recommendation that sprayings of dicamba weed killers be banned after April 15th of next year. A lot of farmers look at this product as an excellent product from the standpoint of controlling certain weeds, but by the same token, there's been a wind drift problem after it's been applied that has impacted soybean crops and other crops. So always something to be concerned about.
What can we expect tomorrow morning on the Big Show?
Tomorrow morning on the Big Show, strangely enough, September 15th is the start of the lawn planting season. If you want to start a new lawn or if you want to repair your old lawn, now is the time to do it. So it gets established before winter moves in, and we'll be talking to Jim Fazell about what to do with lawns that need help and need a little bit of work. So that's one of the topics we'll have.
We'll be listening bright and early tomorrow morning. Have a great weekend.
You too, and have that pork chop.
Will do. Thanks, Orion. Again, the morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong, 5 o'clock, bright and early tomorrow morning, right here on 720 WGN. And it's time now for the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, September the 8th. A couple of business and economic reports today. The Commerce Department will report on wholesale trade inventories for July. The Federal Reserve releases its July report on consumer spending. Kroger is also reporting earnings today. Kroger, the parent company of Mariano's in Chicago, as a lot of stores across Illinois, will be watching to see how they're doing in the wake of the Amazon takeover of Whole Foods. Also, we'll see later this morning at about 8 o'clock Chicago time, House GOP conference. We'll hear from the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and the Director of Budget, Mick Mulvaney. Later in the day, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and the Foreign Minister of Kuwait make remarks. And later on in the afternoon, we'll see the Basketball Hall of Fame announcement with some nominees taking center court there. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, September 8th.